and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. He's back on home turf, joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how does it feel to be back in the desert?
I'm glad to be back in the desert. It's our monsoon season, one of my favorite times of year.
All right. You were in the left coast of Canada for a rather extended period of time, weren't you?
I was. I spent over 3 weeks in the Vancouver and Vancouver Island area, so, mm-hmm. Yep. But it's good to be home.
Okay, well, keep this up. We're going to make you an honorary Canuck, sir.
Well, as long as I don't stay any more than 180 days a year, yeah. I don't have to pay, help support your health care system.
Yes, so. You've obviously studied how long you can stay in this country without getting dinged in the pocketbook. Now, we decided, Mickey, to focus on natural gas for this edition of the program, what it's used for, its future uses. Let's kick it off, though, at the very beginning. It's a hydrocarbon gas mixture. How is it formed? Can you explain how this fossil fuel is formed in the Earth?
Well, mostly it's formed as a burial of organic material, and that can be plants and algae and fossils and marine life, etc. And it is one of the most important fossil fuels, along with coal and petroleum, mm-hmm. formed with burial at high temperatures and pressures for millions of years, and you got to bury it deeper than oil to generate natural gas.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Just how deep do you have to go in order to encounter natural gas?
That's a good question, and I cannot answer that. Mm. There are shallow gas reservoirs, but mm-hmm. they are certainly were buried deeper than they exist now. So we have sedimentation and burial, but competing with that would be erosion too, and uplift through faults and plate tectonics, etc.
Okay, now in researching its early uses, Mickey, I was amazed to discover that we can go as far back as what, about 500 BC? That's when the Chinese apparently were first using natural gas, and they were actually able to get it out of the ground via pipelines made out of bamboo. That's amazing when you think about it, you know, at that day and age.
Well, I was quite surprised by that too. I had no idea, but certainly they would notice it from natural seeps, and much like oil, we mm-hmm. have natural seeps. They built bamboo pipelines, and they would then burn the gas to boil seawater as a source of salt.
Hmm. Okay, well, let's turn the clock forward to more recent times. I think natural gas in the 19th century initially found as what, more of a byproduct of oil production, and a lot of that natural gas was burned off at the well site, wasn't it?
Well, let's go back to the very beginning, and the first petroleum that was actually exploited via wells was natural gas, and that occurred beginning in 1821 in far northwestern New York, very close to Lake Erie at a place called Fredonia, mm-hmm. And there was a 27-foot well that was a hand-dug well to exploit a natural gas seep, and they built pipelines out of hollowed-out logs with tar and rags, and by 1825 in Fredonia, natural gas was being used for lighting and shops and stores, mm-hmm. and also to run a grist mill. So that was the first real use. And then by 1859, if memory serves, was Drake's first oil well in Pennsylvania, and that was the first production of actual oil.
Okay, now you mentioned hollowed-out logs. That's basically what a bamboo is, isn't it? A piece of bamboo. It's really a hollowed-out log.
Well, I suppose it really is. We don't really think of it as a log, but certainly bamboo is hollow. You can imagine the difficulties of making something in especially in Chinese era, even in the 1800s, before there was steel pipe. You had to find a way to transport the natural gas, and that That still remains a problem.
Yeah, that it's volatile stuff. You got to be extremely careful. Just how dangerous is it?
It's quite dangerous. It's a mix of very light hydrocarbons. It's mostly methane, CH4, but then the other heavier alkanes, which people will know about, propane, mm-hmm. butane, ethane, octane, and it also contains CO2 and nitrogen and the deadly gas hydrogen sulfide and water, of course, and rarely contains helium. But, methane is quite explosive. When you have a mix of 50% air and 50% methane, that's an explosive mixture that if you have an open flame and a confined space, it'll blow up. And so, it's every year we have deaths that occur, especially, methane is also a byproduct of coal mining, so coal mine fires and explosions kill probably thousands of people a year, especially mm-hmm. in places unregulated such as China. We also have domestic, houses will explode on occasion, industrial explosion, pipelines explosions, fires, people that use natural gas for heat, if the furnaces are not well ventilated, could produce yep. carbon monoxide deaths from that, et cetera.
Yep. Well, we're natural gas heated up here, a lot of homes in Canada. Mickey, and you talked about propane. I got a tank of that stuff out of my back deck right now, hooked up to the barbecue. And I know that I think you're a little bit more old school when it comes to barbecue. You like to pour the charcoal on and stuff. But
absolutely. I'm a Weber cook kettle guy, and I always use charcoal. I have no idea how you people can sear a steak with propane. A flame that comes from bottled gas.
Okay. Well, Mickey, we talked about the different types of gas, propane, butane, natural gas. Tell us about the sources of gas right now. There are many out there, including biogas. Run us through those options.
Yeah, well, most of what we use is from deep underground rocks and often associated with petroleum. We also mentioned that methane especially occurs in coal beds, and it's actually mined in coal bed methane, which is essentially an in-situ recovery sort of mining process. Mm-hmm. It also occurs extensively in Arctic regions, especially in the ocean floors and in polar regions, as these methane hydrates, which is essentially methane with attached water. So you have frozen water containing methane. And then it occurs on the surface, lots of it occurs on the surface, in marshes and bogs and swamps and ruminants, mainly cattle, but also sheep, that especially belch and fart all the time. That's a significant source of atmospheric methane. And then a man-made cause would be landfills and the decomposition of organic matter without oxygen produces methane.
Mm-hmm. And do the uses for those various sources of gas differ at all?
Well, most of the gas that we use is produced underground from reservoirs, and we do use some from landfills, and there's movements afoot now to recycle some of the gaseous fumes let off by animals that are farmed mm-hmm. or raised, such as cattle and sheep and pigs, et cetera. But it's used mainly for electrical power, for space heating, for cooking all over the world, vehicle fuel, especially in some lesser developed countries with compressed natural gas, Iran, Pakistan, Argentina, Brazil, India, China, all have vehicles that are actually designed to run on natural gas. Now, you can run your regular old car on natural gas. It just doesn't perform very well because compressed natural gas generally requires a higher compression engine. Mm-hmm. In addition to these, we have other uses used in the manufacture of ammonia fertilizer, fixing atmospheric nitrogen. Russians are experimenting with using it as jet fuel, or experimenting, developing. Now, this is a program being done since the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Most jet fuel is essentially a white gas to a kerosene mix sort of thing. And then it's very important use, especially in the U.S., is in the petrochemical industry for manufacturing processes, especially making of plastics.
Hmm. Well, when you consider the supplies out there of natural gas and the resources that we have to draw upon, I guess you would assume that there's only going to be a greater push for expanded use of natural gas, because there's lots of the stuff out there, isn't there? I mean, we've got hundreds of years of supply out there.
Oh, most definitely. We've got well over 250 years of reserves. Of those known reserves, and these are not resources, these are defined reserves,
mm-hmm.
in the history of use, we have produced less than 10% of the known reserves. So 250 years of reserves. Most of those occur in Russia, but significant amounts in Iran and Turkmenistan and Qatar, and also the U.S.
Mm.
And, the technology of natural gas and the infrastructure, especially infrastructure, is critical. So in terms of production, the U.S. leads, and this has occurred since 2005 with the shale gas boom. U.S. is the largest producer. Russia, Canada is a significant producer. Qatar and Iran, and a lot of this production in the U.S. is from the so-called unconventional gas, which are these gas hosted by shales,
mm-hmm.
and there are immense resources in the United States and other places such as China and Qatar.
Certainly plenty of this stuff out there, Mick, and you talked about shale gas, but shale gas brings with it some controversy because we're talking about fracking.
Well, yeah, fracking is controversial, but it's, in my opinion, just about so much fluff. Hydrofracking has been around since the 1950s and used extensively. What's different now is we've determined a way to drill horizontally economically.
Right.
So the whole shale gas controversy, I think is
overblown.
Will not stand the test of time. It's, the problem with natural gas is really the biggest problem is, in terms of production, is the storage and transport problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's volatile, it's gas, it's not easy to store, so it has to be stored in depleted reservoirs, in other words, areas where gas has been produced or oil before, and so you inject it back down the wells. It's also stored underneath salt domes, and that's where in the United States most storage occurs, is near shore and on land or near shore in Louisiana, underneath salt domes. And then the other way you can store it is liquefied natural gas and store it in storage tanks. It
mm-hmm.
also has a transport problem.
Yeah. At the same time,
it can only be transported in pipelines or via liquefied natural gas or compressed natural gas in trucks. So in the world, a lot of gas is not economic at this point. It's called stranded gas. That's often a product of oil production, but even in areas, unless there's a pipeline or a near-use market, it is either flared. That is increasingly viewed as environmentally unacceptable, injected back in, or in case of a lot of wells in the United States now, they're just shut in pending a better gas price. And then we mentioned the amount of different components to it, from methane dominant, but these near gas petroleum products, then also the other water, hydrogen sulfide, etc. So it requires lots of processing in gas plants, and those have to be very near where the production occurs.
Well, Mickey, is this a commodity that we should invest in, though? I'm reading that production is rising at the same time. Natural gas futures, as we speak, are near their lowest levels in 6 months. So certainly the price of natural gas has seen a better day. And at the same time, we got the price of oil. You know where that's heading.
Yeah, well, we've entered a paradigm. It started in 2005 in the United States with discovery of the Barnett Shale in the Fort Worth, Texas area, and a boom in shale gas production. And what that has resulted in, if you look at the energy content of a barrel of oil, which is a standard volume sold, and in natural gas, it's million cubic feet. If you do the ratio of energy produced, it's more or less 6 to 1, depending on the type of oil and the type of gas. But for IRS purposes, tax purposes, it's viewed as 6 to 1. But if you look at the price, the oil and gas price, the ratios, and I track this on a monthly basis, and our data goes back to 1986. The oil to gas ratio in terms of price in the United States is about 25 to 1 right now. But worldwide, well, let's go look at the UK, okay? The UK, it's about 12 to 1. Why is that? Because in the North Sea, they have lots of gas. So it's depressed in the North Sea in terms of energy content. Whereas the rest of the world, and that would be Russia and everywhere else, Russia being the kind of the big bully on the block in that part of the world in terms of gas production and other things, we might add.
yes.
The ratio is close to the energy content, 6 to 1 to 7 to 1 in the rest of the world. So what that has done, especially in North America, is depressed the gas companies. You know, I'm always interested in small juniors, medium-sized juniors, and what's called the E&P companies, the exploration and production companies.
Yep.
And there's abundant number of those on the Venture Exchange and the Toronto Stock Exchange. And I have invested in some of those. But since 2008, the market is much more focused on oil because of the discrepancy in energy content and the prices in North America, which we just discussed. You know, in the U.S., since 2005, our gas production is increased by 30%. But if you look at the number of drill rigs, and this is also something that we track the U.S. oil rigs, the U.S. gas rigs, and we do a ratio on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there are 4.7 oil rigs drilling to every gas rig in the United States. And from 2001 to 2007, that ratio was 1 oil rig to 4 to 5 gas rigs. So it's completely flopped around.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get a higher gas price, unless you're a very long-term looking contrarian, gas is probably not something that I would choose to get into at this point. I would prefer to look at the energy E&P companies versus gas.
Okay, well, why don't we wrap it up on that note? Mickey, we're going to do this, of course, all over again in a couple of weeks' time. Any ideas what you want to focus on?
Well, we're going to fuel up again and do another show on fossil fuels, and that will be oil, which runs the world. The energy sector is the most important industrial sector on the planet, and oil is king, so we're going to talk about black gold next time.
All right. Thanks very much, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.